Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Wouldn't it be great if you can do your best in all walks of your life? I don't know about you, but I personally find it very hard to do well in multiple disciplines. If I'm keeping up with my working out and eating healthy, I slip in learning and development. And if I'm working on my speaking skills, diet falls by the wayside. Today's guest, Emily Filorama, is a coach who helps people do extraordinary things in all walks of your life. Health, wealth, relationships, you name it. She does that by gently removing your deeply rooted negative self-talk. She's also the author of the book, How to Permanently Erase Negative Self-Talk. Emily, welcome.
Thank you, Rohit. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Before we start here, I want to thank Radio Guest List, who connected us. Radio Guest List is a free online platform where you post your request for a guest and amazing people like Emily in this case reach out to you. So I'm very thankful to them for connecting us.
Cool. I'm glad that we're talking because this is I love the angle of your radio show, talking to immigrants about immigrant experiences. I don't think there's really too many other shows out there that's like this.
Absolutely. So let's start with that. Where are you originally from, Emily?
I'm originally from Taiwan. I came here at the age of 9 when my father's government job got transferred to the United States, and he was the only one that knew English. And so I'm the oldest of 4 kids. So we all came over not knowing the culture, not knowing the language and trying to assimilate. And we lived in L.A. for 3 years. Then his job got transferred to New York. And so I lived on the East Coast for junior high and high school, then went away to college in upstate New York.
How was it like moving thousands of miles all the way from Taiwan to U.S. and not knowing the language here? What was it like for you at that time?
It was not easy trying to sit in a classroom in Los Angeles. You know, I'm in the 4th grade and they just put me into a mainstream classroom. I was not put into the English as second language courses or anything like that. And so since a lot of your listeners are Asians, I think they could probably relate to this because we tend to be good in math. Mm-hmm. And so here I am in math class and I'm like 2 grades ahead of them, but I'm in English class and I don't know what they're talking about. So eventually it took about a year to try to learn the language and to try to feel a little connected to my friends. Then the sad thing is just when I started to feel connected, we got plucked away from Los Angeles and we moved in the middle of a school year to New York.
Why did that happen?
I was 12 years old, so that was in the 7th grade. And just imagine getting your junior high is difficult as it is already. Imagining in the middle of a school year, you're told that you have to leave the school and you have to try to make yourself fit into a new school system in the middle of the school year when everybody has already made friends. So that was not a lot of fun in New York.
Was it easy to make friends in New York when you moved?
No, not at all. Not at all. The town that we moved in, we rented an apartment. It was a 2-bedroom apartment for 6 of us with 1 bathroom. And a teenager, you know, I'm trying to fit in and it's just not happening because people already had made friends. And plus, I couldn't keep up with the rest of the kids with their fashions and whatever it is that they were talking about. So I felt really isolated and I felt really discriminated against because that's when the kids started to call me names, all sorts of Asian names, and just felt really, really alone.
Mm-hmm. When you think about immigrant families, right, usually there are some financial difficulties in the family as well. Did you have any of that at all?
Yes. My father was the only breadwinner. And by the time his salary got translated into dollars, and it really wasn't a whole lot of money. So we didn't have a whole lot of money to go around. So just couldn't afford what the rest of the kids were wearing at school. And so that just made me feel like I didn't belong and that I wasn't enough. And yeah, so that started the spiral of just feeling really bad about life at home and life at school. And all I wanted to do was go away and never come back.
Mm-hmm. So at some point, you must have lived more years in the U.S. than back in your home country, right? So yes. Did that ever shift for you, you know, not being able to fit and so on. Because I remember the first year I was in the US, I moved here as an adult, as an 18 or maybe 20 something year old. The first year was hard for me culturally. But then there was a point, and now if I go back to my home country, I feel the same cultural difference. So I'm more here. So was that ever an inflection point for you also?
I think once I got to high school, I felt a little bit better because we did not have to move in the middle of a school year. And so I started to build some friends, and friends who were kind of smart like I was, and that was in the honors classes. So I had a few friends, but I still felt discriminated against. And especially when I was at the home of a Jewish boy and his mother comes home and just gives me a really dirty look and just basically told him never, just gave him the message that don't ever bring her home again. So that really just hit me at the core again, saying, you know, I hate being Asian. I hate being made fun of. And all I wanted to do was to just escape the school, escape home. Well, home wasn't all that great either because it was a lot of fighting between my parents. And so there was no emotional support. So that just made it more difficult for me to really feel good about myself. So all I wanted to do was do well in school and go away to college and never come back.
How was college for you once you moved there?
College was good.
Where did you go to college at? Let me ask you.
I went to Cornell University in upstate New York.
Okay.
And college was good. I don't think I think I could have had a better experience if I was a little more mature and I had some mentors, but that didn't happen. So I basically had to survive on my own, and that was when I really grew the most emotionally. But I still had the discrimination incidences at fraternity parties and whatnot. So it just kept re-injuring the same thing about my identity of being Asian and not being enough and wanting to fit in. And
So you used a term in your book to describe yourself in college. I'm not going to use that here, but what is it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You mean some of the
fruit. It's named after a fruit.
The Asian banana.
Yes. What does that mean?
Asian banana. I didn't learn this term until a few years ago. It's people who are for Taiwanese like me. It's yellow on the outside, but white on the inside. So at some point, some of us that have immigrated early enough, you know, we start to become Americans, but yet when you look at our skin colors, we're still Asian.
So you, before starting your very first business as a nutritionist, Emily, what were you doing at that time?
So for 27 years after college, I worked for a pharmaceutical company and was doing pharmaceutical sales for 27 years. And at the age of 49, a couple of years right before retirement, the company decided to lay me off. And I couldn't believe it happened. But now I know 4 years into entrepreneurship that this is the greatest gift that I have been given, because I was not using my full abilities in the job that I had.
So when you were laid off, what did it feel like? Did you try to get another job, or did you try to do it on your own immediately? What was it like being laid off, and what did it take from there?
It was very painful because my son was at Tufts University and there's no financial aid there. So we had 3 more years of tuition to pay and we still had a mortgage. And so the pressure was on to try to recover my salary. And I tried getting another job for 5 months with another pharmaceutical company, and that just wasn't happening.
What do you mean? You were not getting any interviews?
I got interviews, but a lot of these managers were 15 years younger than I was, and I was basically overqualified for my job. Because I chose to stay in sales all along because I needed to stay in Connecticut, and I didn't choose to take any promotions because that meant moving. And so basically you don't need 27 years worth of experience to get hired into pharmaceutical sales. In fact, they could work against you. And so I think that you know, once that habits are formed, a lot of these managers, you know, don't want people with too many years of experience. So it just wasn't materializing. And I tried to go into the biotech field, and that wasn't materializing either. So I took the little, my financial advisor, when I had gotten laid off, put this little bug in my ear and said, you know what? You should go and launch into your own business. You have all the skills for an entrepreneurship. And I had no idea that was even a possibility.
How did he know? What did he see at that time?
Well, he had known me for 20 years. You know, enough of a friend that he knew what I was about. So he just saw something inside of me that told him she has all the skill sets. And had he not put that bug in my ear, I would have never, ever considered starting my own business. And so that's also another, you know, that's like a little lesson that I want to tell people, is that when you see someone who is just so amazing, remind that person how amazing he or she is, because oftentimes we are not validated in the way that we need that we need in order to really see the full potential of who we are. And so if you see something great in somebody, I would encourage you to just to go and say something to them, because you could very well be the biggest difference in their life.
Mm-hmm. So it was, in your case, the biggest difference in your life, right? And did it happen instantaneously? Like, once your financial advisor told you you need to start your company, how long it take you from that point to starting your own company?
5 months, because I kept interviewing. Then in March of 2012, I said, you know what, if I don't get this biotech job, then it's meant to be that I need to jump full on, full in, invest whatever money I need to in terms of getting business mentors and coaching so that I could do this entrepreneurship thing. I don't even know how to start a business. This is a service business, obviously, but there's still a lot I have to learn with regards to internet marketing and how do I build programs and how do I even coach, etc.
And why internet or online business? Did you consider other options at that time?
Well, it's not necessarily an online business per se, because I started out with one-on-one coaching, and I still need to know how to write marketing copy so that I have a website. So all of that I had to learn. I had to take a nutrition review course, etc. So that, okay, what am I coaching on? Do I know enough?
But did you know that you had to be a coach at least at that time?
Yes, I knew I wanted to be a nutritionist because that's what I studied in college. That was what my degree was in. And so it made sense. Mm-hmm. So between March and July, I took all that time working 80 hours a week trying to figure everything out. And by July, I had taken in my first client. And then as I started to coach clients and do speaking engagements, I discovered that I did not like telling people how to eat their broccoli and drink their green juices, because they were not addressing the real issues, which is the emotional burdens that they're holding on to that were preventing them from believing in themselves enough to eat healthy.
But before you go into like how you changed course after that, how did you get your first clients?
Through networking, speaking. This is the first client was actually somebody that knew of me from the health club, and he wanted to really shape up, and I got a phone call with him, and then he started to coach with me.
Okay, and how many clients you had in the due course that you like? Was it overwhelming for you that you had to change course, or was it just the nature of the work that you didn't like about being a nutritionist?
It was the nature of, I was frustrated because they would adopt healthy habits, and then after they stopped coaching with me, I would hear that they would gain all the weight back. Mm-hmm. And at the time that I was being a nutritionist, what I did was I kept networking. Networking in Connecticut, it wasn't really the right types of networking groups for me. So I started going into New York City, and I started to network with higher level networking groups. And that, the people that I met in New York was the turning point of me turning into what I call myself a success and happiness catalyst.
What was the business called at that time?
My nutrition business was called Executive Image Nutrition.
Is it still on?
I still do nutrition coaching, but within the realm of, if that's just one of the issues that they're dealing with, you know, I coach people to their greatness, to reach their greatness in terms of their health, their career, their relationships. It's about erasing all of the negative messages that were programmed downloaded from childhood that they don't even know that's holding them back from manifesting the health, the wealth, the amazing relationships, and the joy. And when you fix that one thing of all the emotional burdens that you're holding on to from childhood, those messages, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm not lovable, or Asians are supposed to be engineers and mathematicians, or doctors and lawyers, and Asians are not supposed to be vocal. All those, sometimes we are holding on to cultural and legacy burdens that stop us from really speaking our truth.
Yeah. I'm on the Wayback Machine here, and I'm on the 2012 October version of the Executive Image Nutrition. I must say you had like a completely, October 2012 is only 2 or 3 months after you launched your business, right? And you had a fully functional website. There are some success stories in there. There are client testimonials. And it's very impressive for a first-time entrepreneur and in the first few months. How did you get there so fast?
Because I put myself out there. Because being in the pharmaceutical industry and being in sales was a huge advantage. All my skill sets from speaking in the corporate setting, speaking in front of doctors, knowing how to win friends and influence people, all of those skill sets transferred to me trying to meet new people, networking, giving, getting to know them, giving them what they want so that maybe I could ask to speak to their group, their networking group, or... So I did a lot of networking to try to get myself in front of yoga studios and health clubs, and I just went and did it. It didn't have to be perfect.
Uh-huh. And what is one tip you would give for someone who is starting out to network? What is the easiest way to network for someone starting out?
Easiest way to network, you have to read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Okay. I will link that out in the show notes.
Yeah, that is a classic book that is going to, because you can't get anywhere in life without networking. And it is not all of the successes that I have manifested in the last 4 years. It's not due to my immediate friends and family, because your first degree connections, they're not the key to your success. If you read all of the power networking groups and how to connect with anyone, all those books on networking, it is your loose connections, your second and third degree connections that are going to provide you with the contacts that you need in order for you to take your life and your business to the next level. So you have to be comfortable in getting yourself out there. And the main thing that I want to share with people is so many people are so concerned about networking. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to interact with people. I'm not that interesting. Well, the one thing that they have to learn, and you're going to learn in How to Win Friends and Influence People, it is never about you. You don't have to worry a thing about what you're going to say about yourself. Your job is to ask questions and get them to talk about themselves. That's all.
Sounds very simple, but I don't know if it is that simple implementing it.
Well, and it also goes back to the reason why some people are not comfortable in doing that is because they don't understand the psychology behind human interactions. So the first step to changing how you interact with people is you have to be aware of what's going on. And when you are aware that the other person is waiting for somebody to go first, to ask them questions about themselves. People love to talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. So you are that avenue. And when you do that and you get them to share vulnerable things, then they're going to ask you, who are you? How can I help you? My gosh, you've listened to me so well. And wow, what are you about?
How do you do that though? So when I go to networking events, forget getting the other person to share vulnerable things. What I am worried about is asking stupid questions that they don't want to, that it is so trivial, or they just want to move on, you know?
So give me an example of what you think is a stupid question.
Okay. So if I ask you, Emily, on how you started writing a book, because English is not your first language, right? Would that qualify as a valid question?
Yes. So, do you think that's a stupid question?
Yeah, kind of, because you're an author.
No, Rohit. No, that is a question of curiosity. That's you being genuinely curious.
Yeah.
I'm really curious. Wow, English is not even your language. And how did you write a book?
Yeah.
And so I have a story behind that. And my God, Rohit is interested in listening to my story. People want to tell their story. And then so I will go on and say, you know, it's writing a book was, I knew I had to write one because my clients kept saying that that I needed to write one. And I knew that I could write. I had gotten to be a better writer as a result of being an entrepreneur, because that it's content creation is all about writing. So I hired a blogging mentor that helped me to get a little spicier and better. And so I just wrote. And what I did was I hired a developmental editor, which is an editor that helps you to develop the story. And she cleaned it up for me. We went back and forth several times. And that's how I produced the book, wrote the book in 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I'm worried about asking is maybe not something stupid, but something that you can easily find out by Googling, or something that you, even that is a valid question. You're nodding your head, I see. So even that is a valid question.
Yeah. So you're worried that your question is going to be stupid because you're worried that I'm thinking, Rohit, you could just Google how I, well, you know what, that story is only in my that part of the story is only in my book. That's okay. Not on some website. Maybe it's on in some interview, but people are not going to take the time to look for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because okay, so then I'm curious about what part of you is, did something happen in the past when you have asked stupid questions and somebody said that was a stupid question?
Oh, this is like an online session. I love it. So let's think about it. So I've connected with some influencers, and mm-hmm. I went there and just stared at them. You know Pat Flynn, right?
I know who he is. He's that smart passive income.
Yeah, he's a smart passive income guy. I met him up at the podcasting conference, and I really love his work. So I went up to him in the Podcast Movement conference, and I shook hands with him and just stood there like a rock. And then he walked away in a few minutes, right? And like I didn't even exist. So that is a failure, right? For example.
So you didn't say anything to him because you got cold feet. You didn't know what to say.
Yes. Yes, for example. Yeah.
Was that the first time you had experienced something like that, where somebody just walked away and rejected your presence?
I doubt that is the first time. I'm sure it must have happened before that.
Was there an authority figure or teacher, parent, coach that you could remember trying to say something, but you got choked up? You were so afraid of the authority.
Let me think about it. My teachers. So, no, I can't think of any particular moment right now. And that was one of the things that I was, when I read your book and I read your interviews and your past and everything, that was one thing that kind of troubled me also, which is all of the things that you said about negative self-talk, deeply rooted in your past is fine. But what if I did not have any traumatic experiences in my past? Would these techniques still be valid for me?
Yes. 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 Because it doesn't have to be traumatic.
Uh-huh.
I'll give you a couple of examples. I just had a session with a client who was doing really, really well. And then all of a sudden she had this dark cloud, this heaviness come over her head in the last 3 weeks. She just felt like the joy was robbed out of her. So we got to know this part that was so heavy that was trying to tell her something. And so as she befriended this part and this part started to speak, it really let her know that, you know what, you're not speaking your truth and you're not being who you really are and et cetera, et cetera. And what it revealed to us was the part of her that she had forgotten about was as a teenager, she had her name changed slightly because she didn't like the nickname that she was called, and so that people would take her seriously. And so that original young part of her, she had basically shoved away with her stuffed animals and said, nope, that part of her that was called the nickname, the fun and joyful part.
No, that is again a bad experience in someone's life, right? And when I think back, when I read your book, it is very fascinating. And when I think back about my own life, I barely remember. I'm very fortunate for that, I must be honest. And I barely remember anything that troubled me, even to the even remotely to the extent that you talked about in your book. And for the first time, not for the first time now, but for the when I see content like this, for the first time I would feel kind of bad about not having a bad childhood in a way, because I was very fortunate. But still, that doesn't mean that I'm perfect in all walks of my life, right? I still have struggles. I have trouble, like I mentioned in my intro, when I focus on my health, my knowledge and learning falls on the wayside, and when I focus on speaking, my diet goes out the door. But I don't have any of those bad experiences in my childhood that I can remember.
It doesn't even have to be really bad experiences. All it could be is I have this client that he had wonderful parents, but his mother was always downloading him messages that are keeping him stuck today. He has about 50 pounds that he needs to lose. And his mother always said, you're not going to eat anymore. There's starving children in Africa. You got to clean your plate off and et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And so now he has this part that has to finish everything on the plate. So when he goes to a restaurant, you know how restaurants in America serve very large portions. He's not a doggy bag person. He's not about eating leftovers. And he says, the animal has sacrificed for me, so I have to eat this 32-ounce prime rib. Mm. Eat it all in one sitting. So we are working on deprogramming that message from his mother. He didn't realize that that was what was going on. And the other thing is that kept him back, and this happens a lot in people with weight struggles, is that they're afraid, the part of them that wants them to keep eating and keep a extra 10, 20 pounds on, is that it wants to protect them from actually becoming the envy of their friends. Because if they're too skinny, they will get criticized. If they look too good, if the person is already successful financially and has a great career and is smart and has a great education, and the one thing that's holding him real, making him fit in like everyone else, is his weight, it's a sense of love and belonging. Mm. Because if he got too skinny and makes a lot of money, is handsome, is basically that triple or quadruple threat. You know, the person that's got everything, education, looks, and body and mind and a great girlfriend, boyfriend, everything looks right, then that means you're going to get criticized because people are insecure. So if they see that you are more perfect than they are, you might get kicked out of the tribe. So our number one need is for validation and love and belonging. And so if there's any chance that we are going to get kicked out of the tribe, we have to do something to try to stay in, to make ourselves small. Mm. And that's why for some people, starting a business and being financially successful is also very hard, because they're thinking, wow, if I make more money than my friends, who are my friends? They're not going to like me anymore. I have to find new friends.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So it's not about the nature of the experience itself. It's not about the quality, whether it's good or bad. It's either of them could condition you as a kid, yes, into what you're doing now.
Yes, yes, yes. And even the teacher, even meaningful Asian parents that always want good academics from their kid. You bring home the B's, and then daddy or mommy looks at you and is like, where the heck is the A?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And they do that often enough, then the belief that you start to take on is, am I not good enough just the way that I am, with a B or B plus? Mm-hmm. I could never do anything that could satisfy mom or dad. Mm-hmm. They want me to get into an Ivy League school. They want me to make lots of money. They want me to be an engineer. Why can't I be an artist?
So I had some things that I wrote down, but what we are talking is so much more interesting than what I have. So I'm going to trash that completely. Going to ask you next is if you identify such a conditioning in yourself, right, which in itself is a very hard thing to do, but once you do that, what do you do with it?
Well, what you could do is you need to go in through the protective mechanism, which are the parts of you that are in extreme beliefs, behaviors, and thoughts that are holding you back from feeling really good about yourself. So those are, let's say, identify the parts of you that eats too much, which a lot of people have, works too much, is a perfectionistic, have perfectionistic tendencies. Some people are controlling or arrogant. Or they suffer from sadness, depression, anxiety, or they shop too much, drink too much, any of those things. Those are all extreme behaviors, which I think most of us know if we suffer from any of those, that's not our real self. So those parts of us went into extreme. I have to keep working, I have to keep overachieving, I have to get another initial after my name, I have to go get my graduate degrees now, I have to go become vice president. Because those parts of you are driven by some sort of little trauma or big trauma that you suffered.
And what can we do about them though? Like once you identify and once you know that there is a trauma which is causing me a particular behavior in a certain way. Let's say I was telling you earlier, right? So when I'm focusing on health, for example, I do extreme diet. I go for a month without eating a grain of sugar. But I won't focus on any learning and development. I'll come back home and play video games on my computer. And now I'm working on my blog on podcasting, right? So I don't do any exercise. Like I would go in the middle of the night to the 7-Eleven next door and buy a tub of ice cream and eat it all myself. So I can't do both at the same time. And I know that I do this, right? But with the awareness that I do this, what can I do about it?
So you have to identify. So in my book, there are the steps, and people can download the steps if they go to nonegativetalk.com and they could give their email and they could be sent these steps. You
Okay.
have to befriend the part of you that you're not crazy about. So this part of you that doesn't want to eat healthy, that takes over, what is its job? And you have to see, what is its job in showing up? And you, if you hate it, it's just going to keep doing more of its job. You have to befriend it and get to know it, because it's trying to tell you something. Maybe, without doing the actual work with you, I'm just sensing that maybe this part now takes over because it's afraid that if you're doing the podcasting, if you're doing all these other things that are great in your life, you become the success that you are. Okay, how do we keep Rohit real so that he's relatable to other people? Maybe we make sure that his health isn't top-notch so that he could re his other friends can relate to him. Because if he's being a success financially and relationship-wise and everything else, then there's got to be something that he's struggling with so that his friends feel like he's just like them. Maybe. And without doing the work with you,
Got it.
We can't see what that is, because it's afraid of something. It's afraid, maybe this part is afraid that you are going to lose your friends if you eat healthy and you do everything right and you're perfect.
Yeah, I just went to the No Negative Self-Talk and put my email address there. I'll definitely follow through all the steps. And I'll also link it in the show notes for someone listening who wants to try it out. So, Emily, tell me about the book that you wrote. How did that come to be? Right from your coaching business to writing a book is not a natural transition. It's a significant step in a forward, right? And you talked about a little bit how you got to writing in the first place, but how from writing on a blog to writing a book?
Yes, and I got a book deal in 20 minutes talking to a total stranger at a reception in New York City.
Oh, wow. That sounds like an interesting story. When what was that reception?
It was a reception I was invited to because 2 months prior I had started flirting with somebody at the bar. So again, you see, we talked about going up to strangers. So my whole story is when you do the work to get to know yourself. Even if you have not had, you don't have to have big traumas in order to do the inner work. You have to get to know what makes you who you are and identify any of the fears, insecurities, or negative self-talk that could be holding you back from going up to a cutie pie at the bar and starting a conversation with a total stranger. And so because I had done my work 10 years ago, when I fell into depression because I had swept all that discrimination baggage under the rug, that was my body and my mind's way of telling me, rescue these parts of us out of the past because you're holding on to all the shame from being Asian. So I had to do the work to reparent my young parts. And then so that when I launched into entrepreneurship and I'm trying to push full throttle on the gas of the bus of my life, I didn't have any parts of me that were holding me back on the brakes, because all my inner team were on the same sheet of music. It's like, okay, we know you could do it, Emily. We're going to jump off the cliff. We'll just build the plane as we go. And so this is me just taking the next steps, just keep going up to strangers, keep networking. And in February of 2014, I met somebody. I was early to a networking meeting. I just went up to the bar, started chatting with some guys. After 10 minutes, this person says, oh, I'm a CEO of a marketing company. What you do is fascinating. Can you come to my office in a couple of weeks? Because we need to continue this conversation. So in a couple of weeks, I followed up. Again, this is the key to networking. You could be meeting people. You have to do the follow-up. Mm-hmm. And so I talked with him, and I ended up doing a talk for his office. And then after I did the talk for his office, he says, oh, my gosh, you know, you're great. You need to meet some of my friends. And so I went to 2 weeks later, I was invited to a party in New York City with 100 people. And just all of a sudden, in the middle of the reception, I turn around. Somebody's asking me like 20 questions. I'm like, who is this bozo being so nosy? And he said, wow, you have this interesting story. You have, what you do is very interesting. And do you have a speaking platform? Do you have any plans on writing a book? And I said, well, in fact, 2 weeks ago, I wrote in my journal that writing a book was a top priority in 2014. I don't know how I'm going to do it, blah, blah, blah. And he says, no, stop. Don't worry about it. You've been talking to a publisher for the last 20 minutes. I'll take on all the risks. I want to publish your book. So the message is, when you believe in yourself and when you do the work to figure out what it is you are meant to do on this earth, find your soul's calling, because you have to keep taking the steps. Because I found my soul's calling through going into the nutrition space first, realizing I didn't like that, and then meeting the new people ended up revealing my soul's calling as a Be More Extraordinary magician, using this powerful modality of healing called internal family systems to get people to get the diamond of their real self out so that they could be driving the bus of their lives to somewhere really awesome. So when you know what your soul's calling is and you believe that you deserve everything that you plug into that GPS and you don't have any of that negative self-talk, that's when your energy changes and you're vibrating from such a high energy that the universe does its magic and has you be at the right place at the right time. And that's how I got my book deal. I also have attracted a number of other amazing opportunities and international speaking stages because I know that there's a bigger message that I'm supposed to get out there in the world. And you just
what is one platform that you can share that you spoke recently that you're proud of?
I recently spoke, just in this last year, I spoke twice at a conference called Awesomeness Fest, which is it's awesomenessfest.com, and it brings together 300 game changers from around the world. And we do amazing things at this conference. It's really deep connections. You know, people find their next business partner here, and it's a lot of networking. It's a lot of connection at the deepest level. And so because I have been networking within this community in the last 3 years,
As an attendee
for the first couple of ones, and then I applied to be a speaker. And so I spoke in Croatia in May, and I just recently spoke in Costa Rica in front of 350 people.
So it's like a event which is at a different physical location, and you're spending time with them throughout the conference. Is that how it is?
Yes, it's at a luxury resort. And they have amazing parties and amazing experiences that they take us through. It's a 4-day conference. And it's, I would encourage people to apply. And yeah. So you're a room full of extraordinary people. And what happens in this room full of extraordinary people is that some of us end up feeling like the small fish in the big pond. And when you feel like you're the small fish in the big pond, because some of these people are famous and they have, you know, they make millions of dollars and they speak all over the world, your little girl or little boy parts come up feeling not good enough. That part of you is like stuck in the fourth grade when you were rejected by the cute girl that you tried to kiss. So those parts of you get revealed during these conferences. You know how, you know, if you were to walk in, just like what happened to you when you were trying to go up to Pat Flynn.
Yeah.
And you froze.
Yeah.
So it's a little boy inside that like froze, that didn't feel like he was good enough to say something to Pat Flynn. And that's what happens on a mass scale when you're in a room full of, you know, imagine if you're in a room full of the Pat Flynn's. It's like, what am I going to say?
Yeah. So it will help you identify yourself with your inner self, which will, and if you address that, it's going to do great things for you. Right. Yes. And actually, that brings me to one point. So I saw you answered a lot of, you addressed a lot of things from your childhood in that book. And I was really amazed at the compassion you have had for your parents and for your dad in particular. And if something like, if I was going to go through the same experience, I wouldn't believe that I would have such a level of compassion. There was everything that you're stating was matter-of-factly without being very judgmental. How is that possible?
That's possible when you heal yourself. I did not like my father for the longest time. I just, everything that I experienced at home, also at school, I was blaming him. Then when you heal yourself and understand that you're the only one that you've been waiting for to reparent the young parts of you that are still frozen in old significant emotional events, now I realize that he is frozen in childhood. He never felt like he was good enough. The way that my grandmother parented him, he is just in a lot of pain, emotional pain. That's why he cannot be the father that he can, that I wanted. So you release all of the negative energies. And now I have compassion for him in the way that he's never going to be able to be there in the way that I need, because he doesn't know how to be there for himself. Mm. And then when you see other people who push your buttons, controlling, arrogant, whatever, you end up like, oh, you shrink them down to a five-year-old. It's like, oh, this is a five-year-old needing control. And this is a five-year-old that's in pain. So you have compassion for the jerks in your life.
Compassion for jerks in our life. We could all use more of that for sure.
Yes. Yes. Because when you love yourself very, very much, you have so much love to give to others. And when others feel your love, that is when the world just opens up to you.
Great. Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much. So what if someone who is listening out wants to contact you, what is the best way to do so?
Go to my website, bemoreextraordinary.com, and they could contact me through the contact page, or they could just send me a direct email, emily@bemoreextraordinary.com. And the number one thing that I want to leave with your listeners is that you need to do the work to fall madly in love with yourself, because the energy of self-love and belief in you is what will help you manifest the magic in your business, in your relationships, in your health, and in your joy. And it's all about doing the inner work first, becoming more self-aware. And if you are holding on to limiting beliefs or negative self-talk, those need to be erased, and you need to reprogram your subconscious so that you believe that you are the greatest thing since sliced bread. And when you believe in that, anything can happen. Anything you want will come to you.
I can't put it any better. Thank you so much, Emily.
You're welcome. If your listeners want to know more, there's more information in the book, How to Permanently Erase Negative Self-Talk, so you could be extraordinary.
Yeah, How to Permanently Erase Negative Self-Talk, available on Amazon. I purchased that book and read almost halfway now, and it's a brilliant book. Thank you. Thank you so much, Emily.
You're so welcome, Rohit. Enjoyed speaking with you tonight.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again and have an amazing day.